Welcome to another episode of Roll or Die. Today we have one of my old teammates twice over. So we were teammates at Peter Devine. We were teammates at Absolute. He's an OG. He's been around the traps a long time. He's a sweetheart. He's absolutely, you're going to love to get to know this guy. He is Jamie Selby Fan. Thanks for joining us, Jamie.
Oh, thanks for having me. Very much appreciated.
Awesome, man.
Can we start with, sorry, Anton, I'm going to jump in.
You go, Kim. You go. You start it.
With your name. So when I met you first, you were Jamie Selby, and then you married the lovely Sophie Pham. So tell us about your name.
So we decided to hyphenate our names when we got married. We went through a few different versions as to what that might be, and then, we landed on Selby Pham and seemed to... sound nice.
I love that,
so
man.
You changed your name too, because
we both changed our name.
I've only ever seen that from the female side. Can you tell us about why you decided to do it too?
It was pretty much just that. Just wanted to have the same name. There's a thing to share.
Mm. Yeah.
Can I do that? Can you have a triple surname? Because I'm about to marry this woman, Zinoviva. Right, so then, that's her surname. Could I be Harrison Kearns, is it possible to have that?
No, too much. Already your surname is long, Come on, that's a long name. Yeah.
Well, Jamie, do you think I can? Because if you think I can.
Yeah, if you want to. No one's going to stop you.
Awesome. Only those forms when you have to fill them in, you won't even fit.
Run out of letters.
Yeah. That's awesome. And also my question for you, Jamie, is which club's better, Devine or Absolute, brother? No, I'm joking.
That's a funny question. I don't know, it's tricky. It's like all the, even within the different teams, all the different affiliate clubs are quite different to each other.
Mm.
So that was something I'd enjoyed a lot, was visiting all the different affiliates. When I was in Pete Devine's team, would visit all the different affiliate gyms and get to know the different coaches and the different cultures and styles, techniques, mindsets of the different clubs and coaches. And the same with Absolute as well. So they're all quite different, even within the teams to each
other. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more, brother. And that diversity in culture is one of the things which I'm really attracted to about BJJ. It's like there's this core thing we do called BJJ, and then there's diversity around all of that, which makes it just a mountain with no top. Yes.
And so tell us then, Jamie, how you got started in jiu-jitsu, how you joined to be in, what happened there?
Yeah, I think it was about, 2008 with... Misha, we started wrestling under Target, and that was at Malfa Martial Arts, and Marianne was there. And then she was doing the wrestling, and from becoming friends with her, she like nudged us both into into the jiu-jitsu as well.
Interesting.
And then at that club, I think everyone went on holidays over the summer, and it was just sort of as Mish, myself, was starting to get a bit obsessed with it. So then the club went shut down over summer holidays when we were more free from uni and wanted to do more training. So we had another friend recommend that we come check out Pete's team. And then I was sort of in two teams for about 6 months, but was enjoying the jiu-jitsu a lot more. So just sort of gradually the wrestling dropped off and then pretty much shifted fully across to Pete's over the span of about 6 months in the first half of 2009, I think it was.
Mm.
Yeah.
So moral of the story, coaches out there, do not close your gym over Christmas because you may lose members just like this. And, stay open.
Pretty much.
And Marianne must have been about four when she was teaching you, I'm guessing. How old was Marianne? What was she like as a coach back then?
She was a student.
She was a student.
That was you were coaches. Target was teaching the wrestling with Dan Keane as the assistant coach.
Yeah.
And then in the jiu-jitsu, it was Dan Shore and Jeremy Tocody.
Oh, wow.
Were the jiu-jitsu coaches there.
Very cool.
Marianne, for someone who's not so active in jiu-jitsu now, has had a big impact on a lot of people in the jiu-jitsu scene. Marianne Mullahy, we still want you on this podcast. Please come on. In case people don't know, she actually designed the logo for this for our podcast. Roll or Die is her handiwork. So she's a very super talented, again, another sweetheart, you know.
I'd say amazing. Countless people in the jiu-jitsu sphere that saw her as like a big sister type figure.
Made it
very fun and accessible and enjoyable.
And she trains like twice a year now, but she'll still like rip your arm off. She's still got it. She's still so technically there. So, Marianne, come back. We need you. Yeah. We need you. Yes.
Absolutely. I rolled against her just a couple of weeks ago, actually. It was really nice to see her. And,
mess you up.
But at the same time, she's always around. She's kind of like a godlike creature. She's always around creating memes and then posting those, like just when you need it, she'll make something funny and post it. But this is about you, Jamie. This podcast. I know that you faced some really tough challenges around your health at some point. And I would love to kind of learn a little bit about that if you're comfortable to share.
It could have been a lot worse than it was. I was very lucky sort of within the constraints of the circumstances. I'd had a benign brain tumor that was misdiagnosed for a little while. They thought that it was a combination of an ear infection and some kind of extended gastro. Then that was like a pretty unpleasant period during the misdiagnosis sort of phase of things. But then once it was identified, the ear specialist eventually had pushed. So they finally sort of scanned my ear, but pretty much based on her pressuring the doctors to do something. And then the ear specialist scanned it just to sort of confirm if there was an ear infection, and there wasn't. There was no ear infection. And so he quickly picked up on that was almost certainly a brain issue then, because at that point I pretty much had constant vertigo, no sense of balance, and wasn't able to eat. So he picked up on that and then booked me in for an emergency brain scan, and they identified it. And thankfully the tumor itself was really small, but there was a very large liquid sort of pocket that was putting pressure on things, and the sort of, I think, sloshing around to that, to my understanding, is what was throwing out my sense of balance.
Wow.
Then they booked in the surgery as sort of as quick as they could, which is very soon after, and woke up feeling sort of the best I'd felt in a few months. So, there was a bit of a long recovery process because it was brain surgery. And that was not so fun because my leg muscles had a bit atrophied during that time, and had to sort of rebuild back up, like walking properly and all that kind of stuff. But jiu-jitsu was like a really fun sort of incentive to get all of that sort of back happening again, because I wasn't able to train for about 6 months or so in that period. There was a real silver lining to it though, because that was the time period when I decided to change teams from the Devine team to Absolute with Lockie. Awesome. So sort of it forced me onto the sidelines, and had some issues with the way that one of Pete's affiliates was sort of running his team in terms of his coaching style. And then being on the sidelines rather than sort of in a student position had made that a bit clearer. So had made the decision then that when I was sort of cleared to come back and healthy, that it was the right time to move. And it was a really good move. Have really, really enjoyed. I've really, really enjoyed the time at Absolute.
How was it coming back, Jamie, from that, like those initial few weeks or months? Like, I know for me, coming back from injury is always a little bit scary. You've got to really be careful picking your partners. Maybe that would have been even compounded for you being in a new gym entirely, kind of learning who's safe. And how did you get back on the mats? How was that transition?
Trying to what that process. So it was a bit gentler than that, because before I was able to return back to training, Soph started training at Absolute. So she initially started with the women's classes with Liv, And then she was starting to train more regularly. So I was sort of around for a few months and getting to sort of know people and watching and becoming a familiar face before I was able to start like training again. So by the time I could start, already had a bit of a sense of sort of who and what would be sort of good fits, that kind of thing. But it was also an interesting thing where, like, at that time when it was in the South Yarra gym, I'd say most of the students there had come from previous teams. And it was this very interesting, like, melting pot of different styles and perspectives and vibes and that kind of thing, which I really enjoyed. It was also quite a small gym at the time, so everyone got to know each other pretty fast.
Liv used to call it the refugee gym because we
were definitely jiu-jitsu refugees as well.
Somebody was writing about that gym the other day, and I think it was Daniel Hart, or maybe it was in his black belt speech or something. I don't know. Anyway, he was talking about it as the most inappropriate place for a gym, and like I'd forgotten that there was like load-bearing poles in the middle of the gym with like padding strapped to these poles. And it's just like, it was a weird place for a gym, but it had amazing talent in those walls.
I think there's a lot of really sentimental feelings towards that time there from everyone who I've known who was part of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you talked about the right time to move. And that's interesting. Like, I think people face that quite often. I've faced it. I know that. Like, clubs go on, they're on this roller coaster of culture, right? Like, it's sometimes gyms are all together and sometimes they don't. Sometimes there's people who don't like you there and other times people love you there, whatever. Like, I was talking to someone yesterday and they just feel like they're on the outer at a new gym and they've only been there for a moment, but no one's including them to roll. And now they're thinking, well, maybe I should just change gyms before rip the band-aid off this thing. I guess my question for you is, like, you had this incident interrupted your life and gave you the clarity. What do you think would have happened in a parallel universe?
Yeah.
You not been given that moment. Would you have suffered? Would you have eventually found clarity?
It was a weird situation where the student group there were all very close-knit, very, very close-knit. They would clash essentially with the coach, or maybe it's more appropriate that the coach would clash with the students. I think it's like that kind of thing where you see it in a lot of gyms where, the coach will start and they'll have like white belts and then they'll build them up. And there's a certain time point when the students start to become more challenging to the coaches. And they either take pride in the fact that they've built the students up to a level that nothing starts to, it becomes like smaller gaps and all that kind of thing, the longer you do it. Or they start to, or ego gets in the way, I guess, and they start to feel like threatened, or they feel that it's a challenge to their sort of status or seniority or control over the trajectory, or so large range of issues that can come up. And that was very much the case there like Chris had been an excellent coach in the sense of building up a skill set there and creating this really tight-knit group there that loved the game, really enjoyed and appreciated like the game and sort of the theory and techniques behind it and got along really well. But then also just tension was starting to build as those students started to excel and progress towards like the higher belts. At least at that point, that was starting to manifest in a bit of an ugly way that was starting to make things a bit tense and unpleasant.
Interesting.
Hadn't left. I don't know. I feel like we're already at that point, it was a weird thing where I was teaching some of the classes and he was teaching some of the classes, and the club was already a little bit starting to fragment in terms of who was turning up to which classes. I don't know if we would have just sort of followed that track. I feel like sort of stepping away from it was before things hit some sort of big explosive moment.
Yeah. Man, thanks for sharing that. That's a fascinating insight into the culture of gyms. It happens. Like, this is the thing. Like, there's all these kind of upwardly moving energies, hopefully upward moving, or sometimes sideways, or sometimes degrading, like or downward kind of spiraling. Like, there's so many things going on at once. You're right. Like, the culture's like, it's like, the culture of a yogurt or something else. You know what I mean? Like, get it wrong and yeah. things just go off everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. it's been just amazing. So like still in touch with that group, and you know, now that the students of our team are on like a number of different teams, but all still in touch, and everyone's stuck with it for a long time.
And tell us about, so getting your black belt from Lachlan Giles, I mean, that's a pretty special thing. Tell us about when you got your black belt.
Were you expecting it? No, not at all.
What was going on for you at that time?
Yeah, Emily was born 3 weeks before. So, yeah. You know, sort of was still in that new parent sort of blur period where it felt like we'd just gotten home from the hospital. And from my perspective, I was sort of just rocking up to be supportive and sort of social and for Emily to meet a bunch of our friends. And Soph knew, I didn't know. Soph had told me to like bring my gear. I think she told me that like one of my friends was needing like a spare set of gear or something like that. Yeah. I don't know, that made sense at the time, even though we're totally different weight classes, but in a sort of sleep deprived state, that seemed reasonable enough. So yeah, rocked up and had thought I was just gonna be sort of sitting on the sidelines, but then it was my day for grading.
Yeah.
Mm. What about competing, man? Like I don't think I've ever seen you compete. I'm not saying that you do or don't. I haven't seen anything that I don't.
At white belt, I did quite a bit at white belt.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did a couple of blue, and then that's right. What was it, 2011? I got like a concussion in one of the competitions at blue belt. Not intentional. It was I had like closed guard, and the other guy like stood up, and then while sort of trying to push me off from that thing, both just fell over and like just sort of clashed, and just got like crashed from that and
slam.
totally unintentional.
Yeah.
But like the combination of that with also just uni stuff getting a bit busier, then I didn't compete during purple belt. I think I did one in house at brown belt, didn't compete. I haven't competed at black belt.
Yeah. Okay.
And Jamie, you've lost a ton of weight. Can you tell us a bit about that? Like you've, if you don't mind me saying, like you've had
like halfway back.
you've had a little bit of an up and down. But like recently though, like you look amazing. What's your secret?
That was one of the reasons I'd gotten into jiu-jitsu initially, was to try to like get a bit healthier, a little bit fitter. Definitely, particularly at white belt, was competing like a lot then, and was it? I think it was in the 67 division at that point.
Yeah.
I'm a lot more than that now. But adding in a physical activity that I really enjoy and makes it sort of easy to do regularly. I think it was essentially that, like finding it as an exercise sneakily snuck into a game that I enjoy playing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really helpful.
Your game is pretty annoying, can I say? Sorry, no offense. In a good way.
That's your fight name, Jamie Annoying Selby Fan.
You've got a submission that everyone known as the Selby Platter.
It's been a while.
One of your sweeps that is very annoying called the Angry Hat. Tell us about that.
There's just a lot of ways of sort of grabbing people in ways that are sort of tankly, and find the mechanics behind that interesting. So like a lot of what I find fun in the game is to see how you can sort of tangle people up. I think it was from Pete. I can't remember who it was from. It was either from Pete or some other person, but had heard them talk about like where like the goal of the game is to make your opponent defenseless, and then the submission is the inevitable consequence of them being defenseless. And that really stuck with, and I always thought it was quite interesting. Pretty much I've for a long time found it quite interesting how to sort of grab people or twist things in a way that feels quite tangly and restrained.
Awesome.
For people that don't know, when you're rolling with Jamie, so you sort of, you feel quite comfortable, you know, he lulls you into this sense of security that you feel like, okay, things are all right. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, I don't have that arm anymore. Like, what? That arm is gone. And you're like, wait, I don't have the other arm either now. Like, it's just this slow kind of burn that then you're like, exactly what you said, you feel totally defenseless. You're like, I didn't even know how that happened. Like, it was just, we were going along and then suddenly it's like, wait, this is not right. Something's happening here. So that's my experience of rolling with you. It's great fun, but it's also like super frustrating because you're just like, I'm not even aware of how this normally you can see a path and you realize where you messed up. But with Jamie, I don't even know how I ended up like that.
You have to watch the tape.
I think part of it had come from such, I trained under Ivan. There was that sort of period, particularly on like purple belt where,
Is that
Adam Radicic? Yeah, the Roman gym at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and his sort of game philosophy, I always thought was second to none. Like, definitely, there's certain techniques that he taught that have really stuck with. But his ideas around like distance and space and timing and speed management and sort of what how you can sort of play with those to impact like the sort of psychology within the game. I thought was quite interesting where, you know, it's saying that, you know, normally think about certain distances that people feel most comfortable at. And then, you know, you can be sort of like too far away or too close for it to be comfortable. But his thing that really stuck with me at the time and massively impacted my game was the idea that people have a certain pacing that they feel most comfortable about. And if you can sort of read that, you can go sort of slightly faster than where they feel comfortable and then you sort of take them out of the comfort zone, or you can go slightly slower than they feel comfortable. And so with myself, it's like, can I make things a bit slower than they feel comfortable and then at sort of unpredictable times speed it up and then slot back down again and try to disrupt the momentum of what's going. And yeah, that was all very much from him and his thought process towards how to make people feel, I guess, like psychologically uncomfortable in the game, sort of in parallel to trying to make them feel physically uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's the mind games of the black belt, hey? That's for our listeners out there. That's what happens.
Absolutely.
Ivan's always the best to listen to.
What would you say, like slowing down versus stalling? You know, I mean, does slowing down look like stalling, or are they two completely different things?
I guess, like from my perspective, the difference is whether there is a sort of clear next step that's trying to be achieved beyond just sort of running out time.
Mm.
So, I know with myself, what I want it to feel like is that trying to draw their attention to one part of the body while trying to progress with the other part of the body in a more sort of subtle way. Mm. So, if people sort of focusing on the wrong part, it'll look like nothing's happening, but hopefully where they're not looking, that's where things are progressing. And I think within that, you can sort of give the impression of stalling, but at least within my perspective, I wouldn't consider that stalling.
Yeah, sounds amazing. I love it. Can I ask another question, Kim?
Yeah, because, go.
You got a couple in there.
I got two, yeah.
So as far as your jiu-jitsu journey at the moment, what are you finding yourself fascinated with? Like for me, it's about like deep diving into concepts, like spending hours discussing with I've got a couple of peers or a few peers that I spend once a week. We spend 2-3 hours just on one move, just deep diving on it. That's what's really got my attention. It's more fascinating to me than showing up to class and rolling even. That's what I love. What is it that's got your attention and that you find yourself drawn to right now?
With Emily, so my older daughter, she started a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience of coaching the kids' classes with Liv that Emily's in, that's for sure become like the new favorite thing. It's a, you know, it's sort of overtaken my favorite jiu-jitsu memories is the special moments in that like shared with her. So you know, when she did like her gradings and had like the stripes, and then they had so like an in-house competition the other day as part of like the most recent kids grading. And yeah, all those things have been my favorite thing. So I guess in terms of like my own training, just trying to keep the longevity there, approach things in a way, try to get my flexibility and fitness sort of slowly progressing. I'm definitely not a particularly flexible person, but try to just improve those things to avoid any major injuries that would take me out of it so that I can do it, as a thing to be shared for a long time, hopefully.
You're brilliant.
How does that go coaching the kids? Like, that's chaos, yeah? Have you got any advice for people that might be doing it?
I don't know. It's like, it's fun chaos. I feel like you get to be sort of in sort of fun dad or fun uncle type mode for an hour.
Yeah.
And get to essentially just play games and share the fun of a sport that you like. But, it's only, 45 minutes? So
yeah, it will soon be over.
If someone's having a bad day, they get to go back to their parents at the end of the class. Yeah, and so you get to be fun uncle mode for 45 minutes is really cool. I really enjoy it.
Love it. And what about, you seem like a very kind of liked guy, maybe a bit of a shy guy, but you seem liked. But have you created any, have any amazing friendships come out of jiu-jitsu for you that have kind of moved outside of jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, I'd say that's almost all of our sort of social circle is people from the jiu-jitsu sphere. Mm-hmm. So Emily starting, that was a funny thing because she knows pretty much everyone who was there. She knows them as auntie and uncle, and when they're all doing sort of lining up and that kind of thing. It's all not that episode's particularly formal. So it's on the more informal side of things, but still more than 0%. And she's all oh, I'm okay. That kind of thing. The jiu-jitsu friends have all transitioned to our social friends, and then with a lot of sort of having kids at similar times, they're now the park and playground parent group friends are all our jiu-jitsu friends as well. So definitely.
And I don't want to go messing with you guys at the playground.
And Jamie, outside of jiu-jitsu, tell us what you do. You mentioned being at uni, you're a very sciencey family. Yep. Yeah.
Research science, the work I do at the moment, it's sort of a mix of food science and cannabis science. So mostly from a horticultural type direction, looking at how changing the, fertilizer formulations that you grow foods or cannabis with, how that affects the chemistry and growth properties of the different plants with implications to human health.
Interesting.
Wow. So
I've already, just that explanation makes me feel really stupid. Go on. Sorry.
It's quite how do we make things smell or taste better by growing them in different ways? Antioxidants. Antioxidants is also those sort of superfood type questions. How do we nudge those properties around by growing them with usually plant derivatives or that kind of thing? So it might be molasses or seaweed or those kinds of things. What do they do? And we look at it from partly from the applied outcomes perspective, in terms of have we increased the health promoting properties of these plant outputs? And then also how and sort of why is a bit more of a chemistry type question.
So does that on a cannabis level, do you have to be I'm actually part of a project now to destigmatize cannabis. I'm just consulting in that space. But are you aligned one way or another about cannabis? Do you need to be in order to work in this space? Or do you have views about cannabis?
I'm not too sure. I know with myself, I sort of ended up in there more from the sort of chemistry, molecular biology type study direction I'd been in. And then from that was working in the R&D team at a fertilizer company, which produced hydroponics fertilizers. And then because of the different customer bases there, that transitioned to be both applied food projects as well as cannabis projects. In terms of my personal stance to cannabis, I think there's a lot of very interesting potential there. I think there's a lot of studies out there that show good efficacy for a pretty broad range of applications.
Hmm.
I'd like to see it treated maybe a bit more in a sort of pharmaceutical type way, a bit more sort of standardized. Or it might be that it would be useful to split recreational and medical with a bit more distinction. So one can, you know, essentially they can have like different goals in terms of what they're trying to achieve. I think sort of like having both a little bit mushed together complicates both of them in an unnecessary way.
Very interesting. I like what you say there.
And given that you have like such a science background, do you think that that has impacted on your learning of jiu-jitsu? Like, I guess a lot of people see martial arts is quite sciencey. Some people see it as more artistic and things like that. Mm. How do you approach like your learning in jiu-jitsu? I mean, now you're a black belt.
Yep.
You're still learning, I guess, but especially going back to those earlier days of, you know, white belt, blue belt, purple belt, when you are really learning the foundations.
I think for myself, like curiosity has been like a big motivator as to sort of how I've ended up using or tending towards certain techniques, just being curious, like what would, you know, I wonder what they'll do if I do this thing, or what'll happen if I put my foot here, or what'll happen if I put my hand there, and having a sort of explorative type mindset towards playing the game was quite helpful. I think also maybe just like a personality thing, but like winning and losing in it didn't feel like a particularly big deal. Like just sort of felt like playing a game, and you know, certain outcomes occurring, and you learn from it, and it's sort of interesting, but not such a big deal winning or losing. So from that perspective, yeah, I'd say there's a little bit of a sort of sciencey mindset there, where sort of almost like data collection, but not quite. we're sort of trying things and seeing what happens, and then can you recreate certain patterns, and what does that tell you about like how do you sort of get there? So I know for myself there was maybe like a certain set of techniques that I felt more comfortable in these positions or places, and then it'd be like, what are now maybe like one step sort of separated from that techniques that I like that will get me to where I want to get to, and then what are now like sort of two steps separated techniques that'll sort of get there, and how do I sort of funnel this down where a bit wherever I'm at, I'm only a couple of steps away from these two or three places I'd like to be playing the game at.
Yeah, you've just blown my mind, man. Yeah. Like the idea of data collection as a goal rather than winning or losing. I don't think anybody's ever said that on the show. And also like breaking it down into steps. Sorry, my Facebook's going off. Breaking it down into steps that can be looked at like a process versus fighting and making it fun.
Yeah, it's definitely never really felt like a fight to me. I'd say that's been one very helpful influence of Lockie's. I think before I changed teams, I was a little bit too maybe passive or gentle in the way I would play the game. And what Lockie highlighted is that there's an inefficiency in that, where there's certain moments where you just need to be assertive to complete a certain technique, or you're going to essentially lose that moment, go back a few steps and need to, you know, work back to get to that position again. And you now have to spend, you know, maybe three times the energy to get to that progression. Whereas if you just put a bit of grit into it that first time, that was something I felt was quite special about the South Yarra gym. And I guess like the Absolute Team culture in general is that I think there's a good culture of being quite assertive and bringing a high degree of intensity, but while people are pretty level-headed while they're doing it, like it's not coming from a place of aggression. Or anger. There's no sort of like malice after like the timer finishes. It's just, you know, we're playing a game where you're committing to certain movements and actions, and you know, putting what you can behind it, but it doesn't need to come from a place of aggression. That was new to me at that time. Absolutely. And so before coming to Absolute, I'd only experienced people being pretty sort of friendly and flowy, or being pretty assertive and quite angry or aggressive and putting a lot of maybe like negative emotion into what they were doing, like feeling like they were sort of fighting someone with everything that's packaged with that. And I think Lockie done his sort of mindset towards it, what Lockie and Liv have built up there, it was a pretty amazing thing, where people can go really hard in training but without being sort of angry or feeling like they're sort of emotionally feeling like they're fighting while they're doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really helpful and a big, I contribute that to being like a big progression set for myself.
100%.
Awesome. Fantastic. We've only got a bit over 3 minutes left, Jamie. It's been, very eye-opening for, well, certainly for myself and Anton. Absolutely. I hope for our viewers and listeners as well. Do you have any final words? You've been in the game, about 15, 16 years now? So, a long time. Have you got any words of wisdom for our listeners just in the last 2 minutes, 45?
Yeah. I guess just sort of enjoy the process and find what you find sort of fun and interesting and lean into that. Like lean into what you find, like find it interesting, find people who do things that you find interesting or that you like being around, and that makes the whole process feel a lot more enjoyable. And I think it being enjoyable leads to a lot better outcomes as well, that when everyone's having a good time together, it creates a really good learning environment and a good time where you can particularly where you can push that bit harder and sort of really test if things sort of work or not without feeling that you need to sort of hold back because you're worried that it might misread it or it might get, might sort of trigger a certain set of outcomes you don't want. But when everyone's a bit on the same page and having fun together, you can really lift everyone up together.
Amazing. Sounds perfect. That's a really nice place to end, I think. So thank you once again, Jamie, for giving up your time. I hope our listeners enjoy this. We'll have this out in a couple of weeks. If you could share it for us on your social media, that'd be awesome to help grow our audience. And just a quick for anyone listening out there that is interested, we are looking for sponsors. So if you are keen on supporting the Roll or Die brand, we would love to hear from you. So shoot us a message on Facebook or Instagram. And we hope to get back to you. And we will see you on the mat.
One more thing. We also have a line of Roll or Die rash guards and other merch coming out as well. So we'll put a link on our Facebook page. Sorry, Jamie, we have to get this in now. So we're going to put a link out there and there'll be a discount code. We just want to get the name out there. It's not to make money. It's just to keep spreading the love and the good word of all these amazing people who keep coming on the show. So, Jamie, thanks. You changed my life today, brother. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.